live from Brussels. It's ZN Live. We are very excited today. We have a special guest, Kasia Jazik-Kainsas. I think I got it right. Who is the communication director of Habitat for Europe and the Middle East. And she's got over 10 years experience in communication, actually in the association sector with Europa Bio and EPRA, but also in the European Parliament and also working with EPP. So a very broad perspective. We're very interested to see how those different perspectives have informed you on what you do today. And I want to start with a question about the upcoming European election. I mean, you've been in the Parliament, you've been where it all happens. How important do you think this election is going to be? And with your Habitat hat on, how are you approaching this?
Hi, Phil, and hi, Laura. Thanks for having me. It's really a pleasure to chat with you guys. The European elections, I mean, I'm very excited about them. I think they're, crucial. I'm a devoted European at heart. So for me, these are really one of the most important events that are upcoming on the European stage. A part of some national elections as well that will be quite decisive for our continent. The European elections, if you look at what happened 4 years ago in 2019 and you look at the MEPs that got re-elected, we had over 60% of new faces in the European Parliament. Predictions are saying something very similar will happen now in 2024. I think that's already telling you how important it is for the Brussels bubble, all those new people that are going to come and are going to shape our legislative portfolios for the next 5 years. The other bit is, of course, we're going to have a new European Commission. We're going to have perhaps a new president or perhaps the same president. Nevertheless, we will have new priorities. And those priorities, they will definitely shape the next 5 years of legislation. And again, if you look at 2018, the Commission managed to stick to two major priorities it defined back then, which was digital transformation and the Green Deal. So despite the pandemic and despite the war in Ukraine, those priorities, what they've defined in 2019, they really worked through them and managed to, implement huge dossiers related to it. From advocacy and comms perspective, it's going to be so crucial to follow the discussions, follow what the different parliamentary groups and also what the different candidates are putting forward as their vision for Europe, and really see how you as an organization, corporation, association, can really align yourself against those. At the end of the day, the first one, the quickest on the mark, will be the ones that will probably make the biggest impact at the very beginning. There's going to be some, the trends that we're probably going to see is everything which is related still to digital, to technology, innovation, AI. I mean, this will continue, and definitely to security and to economic security, most likely as well, with what is happening with China, what is happening with the US. I mean, that's going to be probably the big topics that's going to run the campaign and going to run the next 5 years of priorities. I would stop here on the elections.
I just want to change, because when we were actually in 2014, we had the chance to have an inside view. We were working on the Juncker campaign for EPP. And one of the things that I noticed, which I think is very interesting, is that when a political organization is focused on a topic, and we did a really fun campaign for on technology, a little video. You don't have to be a techie to believe in technology. What we noticed is that the EPP was very focused on how people would react to their messaging and their campaigning. And what was interesting is that on the other side, the association world is often pretty disconnected. And I think there's a huge missed opportunity that when politicians engage on your topics, you need to be there and you need to say, hey, that's great, we agree, or how about this, we're not sure. But that's the moment when you get the attention of the politicians. Is this something that you factor in? Are you preparing to kind of make sure that when issues that matter to you come up, you're going to be engaging with that, or do you prefer to wait and see? What's your thought on that?
No, it's a great question. And no, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's about reacting to news, right? This is what we're doing. Of course, you have your proactive, you know, strategy, but you cannot just close yourself into that box and be like, okay, well, I'm implementing whatever I set for my next 12 months and I'm not looking to the side. Mm-hmm. Definitely, if you have, you know, if you have movement at the political stage on your topics, you want to be there and make sure to comment and to engage and to, you know, and whatever, do an event or provide a comment for the news media, whatever is relevant, right? The trick here is to be fast, because again, absolutely, it's not like you're the only organization working on those topics and everybody's just waiting for you to, you know, come up with that beautifully crafted statement. There are many, you're not in a vacuum. There are many organizations trying to, you know, get through the clutter. So I think it's crucial to be fast. That's why it's so important to have, to be clear on what your messaging is, what's your narrative, what are your asks, what are your policy recommendations. So when those opportunities arise, you're not scrambling to put something together, but you know very well what you want to say, and that you have spokespeople that are trained to do so.
Yeah, I think this is really key. It's being prepared, knowing what are the topics and how you can respond. So you don't have to go through a round of approval at that point. And then I think the critical thing is to get the timing right, because I think there is a window when politicians are talking about your topic at which, if you're in the conversation, it really works. So I think that that's really crucial. And earlier you mentioned, you know, how the previous commission came in on two priorities now, and then Ukraine, and well, COVID happened, and then followed by Ukraine, which were two, you know, kind of historical changing events, which did move priorities. What has COVID done to you, your organization, in terms of change? Have you seen a big change? Is it kind of back to how it was before, or is it now, you know, are you working differently? Are you approaching communication differently from COVID?
So it definitely changed the way I, you know, personally work, simply that I work more from home, and I think many of us do. My organization specifically is extremely flexible on the working from home arrangement. I'm 100% working from home. It definitely helps to source talent as well from all over the world. We are a global organization. Habitat for Humanity is present in over 70 countries around the globe. So, you know, for us, working through Teams or whatever platform was kind of already bread and butter, but it just reinforced that feeling. From a communication perspective, what it has changed is, I think it increased connectivity and accessibility, but it also, increased competition for attention, because people's attention span is limited. And now, you know, we are spending most of the time with our computer and we're getting bombarded by all those messages and notification. I actually, you know, made sure that, as I was telling you, I switched off my Teams and my phone and my watch, but actually I didn't manage to switch off my Outlook. So I'm still getting, you know, pinged there. And it's just, it's kind of everywhere, right? And the chat and before, when you were in a face-to-face meeting, you are in a face-to-face meeting. You're kind of, you know, you're physically there and you're mentally more or less usually there as well. On computer, sometimes, you know, that you're off camera and then an email comes in and it, right? It, like, you really, I think you really have to do that extra effort to commit to the conversation and really be, okay, I'm going to be present because that's the, you know, respectful thing. And also that's what's going to bring us benefits in the long term, and not just be like off camera and pretend I'm half listening. So I think that was a change, and that's for internal communication. But for external communication, it's the same. It's also the general you know, webinar fatigue that you can see when you get people engaged. I was talking to somebody from the events sector recently, and they were telling me that pre-COVID for events, the dropout rate was 50%. You could expect 50% to still come. Right now, you expect 30% to come. That's huge. I mean, so if you want to have, you know, 100 people in the room, you need to have like, you know, almost 350 people to register. And I think that's that just on us, it increased the challenge to really cut through that noise and to make sure that you get people's attention very fast. So that whenever you have an article, a press release, a social media statement, that it's, you know, you don't bury the lead, like it has to come out straight away. And either you grab that, you know, people's attention and you hope to lead them through the whole thing, or you're done. I mean, you cannot waste your time.
So how do you create, because that you hear this a lot. Sorry, there's a bit of an echo. You hear this a lot when people working from home, that it's very hard to find balance. The work continues, it continues at night, and the extra time that people win by not commuting, they're spending on working more, they don't take lunch breaks. How do you create balance in your own life while working in this manner, specifically with all the notifications coming in, as you just described?
No, it's true. I mean, it's very often, right? It gets the line gets blurry between personal and professional life, and so easy to reach everybody now, and everybody's kind of expecting, right, to be replied to within the day, within the hour. Well, certain things I'm actually trying to do is take walking meetings, which I absolutely love. I live next to a park, and you know, unless it's an external meeting. I'm telling my colleagues that, hey, I'll be walking my dog and I'll be talking to you, because I also feel that otherwise you're just closed in the same space all day. It's not great for creativity. It's not, you know, it's not great for mental health, honestly. So just this idea of being able to walk and move and just, talk at the same time. It's also quite empowering for your, creative, state. For the rest, I think it's honestly just setting some boundaries for yourself. I know it's sometimes hard, and I do have kids, so maybe I just don't have really a choice, because once they're back, it's like, even if I wanted, they're still small. I can't really, you know, do both things at once, because otherwise I'm going to end up sending some really strange emails to my colleagues. So I think it's also this, just telling yourself that, yes, there's 24 hours in a day, and in the way, there's always going to be something, right? And as I mentioned, I work with colleagues that are in Asia Pacific and in Latin America and in the States. So honestly, if I wanted, I could work around the clock, because somebody's always awake. But that's not the response, right? You just need to tell yourself stop at some point.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And interestingly, we're seeing a trend now of, you know, really back to office. There's a lot of discussion, the news. It's been kind of through cycles where it was a few industries. Now it's a lot more. And I wonder whether the remote work will be more, you know, like an exceptional thing than it was before. I don't know what Justin is talking about. It's McDonald's, but good on you. So basically, yeah, I think that... I find that it allows you more flexibility. I mean, I've been in and out of the office a few times, and I still find that the time of moving back and forth and just the, you know, setting up and getting ready, there's a big kind of, for me at least, there's a big energy cost that you don't have when you're able to be focused. And then, I don't know, I feel that you can adjust to your rhythm. Now, coming back to your specific expertise as a communication director, I want to ask you, so, what do you think makes a great campaign today? And is that different from pre-COVID? Or, I mean, of course, the fundamental principles haven't changed, but, you know, what makes a great campaign, and has anything changed in your mind since COVID?
Well, I think, as you said, the fundamentals haven't really changed. I think at the end of the day, it's about getting people to care. You know, it's just, well, as simple or as difficult as that, getting people to care about what you're advocating for. And it's on both sides, both for the policymakers, but also for, you know, people that you want to take on that journey with you, that you want to, you know, advocate alongside you. And for the policymakers, you know, it's really difficult to advocate for something that's not really on the agenda. And it's not going to be on that agenda unless people understand it and care about it. So this is what that, you know, campaign is. And of course, there are topics that are easier to advocate for because they're culturally relevant, right? I mean, these are just the priorities for, so if you look at the EU, of course, everything that is kind of like related to sustainability or to digital, you know, there are, you kind of have the entry points. There are topics that are not so relevant in our culture necessarily. So then it's about framing it correctly. Sometimes it's about connecting it to the other big topics. For Habitat for Humanity, we do affordable housing around the world, and it has really different, you know, meanings what affordable housing is around the world. But it is really about, you know, getting people access to adequate, decent shelter and empower them through that. And our latest campaign is on informal settlements. Informal settlements in Europe, you know, that's, there are certain countries that would have it for Roma populations. But it is not, unfortunately, a very, very big topic. But if you look at just from that, you know, from that standpoint, it is maybe difficult to get people to care. But if you look at it from a broader perspective and link it to other topics that are relevant, like education, healthcare, economic growth, then that topic of housing, of informal settlements, actually becomes very relevant. So this is just one example to show that, you know, sometimes it feels like it, you know, you cannot really cut through because, you know, maybe you're just looking too narrow. And I think ultimately as well is about your credibility as an organization, as a corporation, association, you know, as a speaker, whether what you say is authentic. Because, you know, we can, you know, all do an eloquent and, you know, campaign, but I think people, you know, people really react to authenticity, to genuine messages, and you know, when people do speak from the heart, I think it, you know, carries that message across differently. And obviously, speaking on behalf of communities of people is for me what engages more than speaking on behalf of our product.
Okay, no, I think that's very good. We have a summary. I guess it's caring, framing, connecting, and authentic story or resonance, I guess. So I think we could put that in a nice slide. I think that's a very good summary. And talking about authenticity, Lyra had a question.
Yes, talking about authenticity and caring, how are you speaking up on behalf of your organization? We had a guest a couple of weeks ago from Honda, Connor Allen, who said it is very easy to become an ambassador for your organization if you truly believe in what an organization stands for. And it's much harder if you work, obviously, for an organization that you are just working, you know, to, you know, as a career choice, let's say. And so it seems like you're truly passionate about what you do for your organization. And so how are you doing on that journey? And becoming an ambassador for, because of course we also, I spoke to someone recently and they said, yeah, don't look at my own channels. I'm so busy in being in charge of the organization channels. And so I don't have time for my own. So please don't look at them. She was apologetically. So, so how's that?
No, yeah, no, but that's very true. And it's very true that we're all, you know, advocates and we're all communicators at the end of the day. Right. So yes, I can only agree that working on something you love and something you believe in helps, tremendously. I do have LinkedIn and Twitter that are my main social media channels that I'm using. So I try to post And, you know, I try to kind of engage with the content that we are producing. Again, I must admit, I've been with Habitat for Humanity now almost a year, and that year was a very busy one. Yes. And I've been also very busy building a team. So I was in charge a lot of our actual social media channels, and sometimes did not have the time for my personal ones, but it is something I want to go back to, definitely. And yes, I totally stand by it. And I do encourage that as well with our colleagues. You know, it's sometimes just resharing is enough. If you, you know, some people are a bit introverted and don't really want to add their own thoughts, and that's fine too. But, you know, just resharing the content and kind of being proud of the place you work in and the things you do is, you know, can go a long way, I believe.
Now, you said you were building a team, so I guess you've been recruiting people. Now, when you meet young professionals, young communicators, what is your advice for them today? What do you think, what would you tell them? We have a lot of them watching this. What's your advice to people who start their communication profession today?
In terms of how they should communicate or?
And how they should start, what skills do they need to focus on? What is your advice to them in general?
Okay, on the, well, so I would say learn. So learn about your, you know, if you started in a job, really get to know the topic in and out. Get to know the audience you're speaking to. So many, you know, well, people with experience in comms as well, like, you know, talk, but, you know, without having that much to say, really, because I think they're missing who their actual audience is. And it's okay not to speak to absolutely everyone. I think it's just so important to actually know who you're talking to. And also know why you're talking. So it's not about talking, just really, why are you talking? And what do you want to achieve? And finally, learn how to tell stories. I think that's something, you know. I've read recently somewhere that reading nonfiction helps as well to just, you know, learn how to tell good stories and engage your audience. And I think we still underestimate the power of a truly, you know, well told stories, the one that kind of, you know, paints that dream and really takes you on the journey and engages you to want to know a little bit more and maybe really, you know, follow with the corporation or whatever, or the association or the organization. So it's an art to tell stories, I think, and I would say that this is one that will, again, go a long way.
Absolutely. So I think you have storytelling, know your audience, know your why, and finally learn to learn. So I think these are very good, very good advice for people. Now we have time for some quick recommendations. So roll jingle. So Kasia, I'll start with you. You have a couple of recommendations from you and your team. So tell us, what would you recommend us to read, listen to, or watch?
So I checked with the team. I thought, you know, they might actually have probably better ideas than I do. And it's totally proved true. So on the book, I've been recommended, and I put it on the top of my reading pile, Switch. And I'm sorry, I need to note it down because I'm not going to remember, by Chip and Dan Heath. And it's a book about how to create change, how to get people want to join your movement or start a movement, and how to speak to both the heart and the mind. And I think that's, again, an extremely important skill to have for communicators. On the podcast, it's a bit of a different one. It is NGO specific, but honestly, it's one that will just inspire you to go out there and do good. It's this incredible recount by Daniel Wordsworth, who's this amazing humanitarian who's been really all over the world in the most disastrous and awful places you could imagine, and still comes out on the other side with this story of, you know, hope and inspiration about how people are good and want to help and how we can actually make a change. And I really don't mean it in a cheesy way, you know, because it might sound this way, you know, but it's just give it a try. They're not very long, those stories, and it's really worth it.
Great. Lira, what are your...
I had one more, and it was an account. And that was my... that was my former colleague, Craig Winokur, who is also a former Politico Europe news editor. And he's... he's great on Twitter to follow. And also on LinkedIn recently, he started writing those short blog posts on PR cliches we can see in Brussels about press releases and, you know, the narrative manifesto and things like that. And honestly, it's just so spot on. And it's really a good laugh.
Yeah, actually, we know Craig and been interacting with some of his posts and talking to him. Lira, what are your recommendations for the week?
Yes. And by the way, thank you for the recommendation by the Heath brothers. I read The Power of Moments, and I was actually writing a LinkedIn post about this yesterday for last week, because I find that a very spot on book, let's talk about that very briefly now that we're on the subject of the Heath brothers. This is about the fact that, you know, when you have an experience, for example, high school or a job, you won't remember, of course, every single day of that job. What you remember is the best and or the worst that happened during that job and the ending, more or less, right? So probably the beginning as well. So you need to make sure that when you have a new employee, when you're building your team right now, Kaja, that the first day is very impressive, that you do something that, for example, you throw a starting party for them, you know, you give them chocolates, you do something very exciting, you let them start on a Friday because it's always very, very exhausting. A first day, you have so much to take in, and then they can recover the rest of the day, the rest of the weekend, instead of having them start on a Monday and then the whole week will be totally exhausting. I think that's a very good idea. And then you have these powerful moments maybe once a year when there's a review, a moment that is celebrational, where you are hoping that they're good employees, of course. And so, you know, so those are when you read that book, you understand also in your children's lives how powerful moments are, which of course is why birthdays are important. Anyway, I like that book. What I wanted to recommend today as well is, and I have a post today on my LinkedIn about newsletters. Of course, everyone's doing a newsletter these days. What makes newsletters good? And I have a couple of favorites I wanted to talk today very shortly about Ari, written in a very difficult manner, but it's pronounced apparently Ari, like it's appearing on screen now. And that is what I like about it, because I find very often people put a lot in a newsletter. It's like, here are all my thoughts of everything and let's just put it in one newsletter. The nice thing about this newsletter is that it takes out one piece of information. It's evidence-based, it's peer-reviewed scientific research about one thing per week. And then you can look into it. For example, social media ads, what should they look like? So they show that they should have a lot of white surrounding the content and the visual in the middle, for example. So they test the different things, and that's what they teach. So you don't have to go through all that research. They look into it for you, and they summarize it in one topic per topic. So I think that's a very good newsletter to subscribe to. That's my recommendation of the week. What about you, Phil? What would you like to recommend?
And actually mentioning, there's another book on moments called When by Dan Pink, which also looks at different specific moments, and it's very interesting for holidays. The end of the holidays is actually an important moment that shapes your view of the holiday regardless of what actually happens. So that's an interesting thing. So my recommendation is a book that I borrowed from my neighbors, actually, called The Righteous Mind, with a subtitle, Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion, a very apt book right now, especially in the divided political landscape we live in. Actually, it's a book on philosophy, psychology, and sociology. And he's looking at basically what are the universal values that we share across different cultures. So a lot of psychological experiments for different groups and what kids believe is right and wrong across all those groups. And it's trying to answer the question, you know, does morality come from universal values or does it come from a social construct? It's very nicely written. I find it, I'm quite fascinated by the story. I got into a whole conversation, for those of you who want to use ChatGPT as a philosophical sparring partner, you can then say, give me the summary of the book, and then you can start discussing the things that you don't agree with or that you want to challenge. And I got to a very interesting discussion about free will and determinism and morality. So if you have, if you want to pursue different topics, I think it's great to use it for. But this book is very interesting. I think it kind of comes to a predictable conclusion that it's by and large a social construct with perhaps some universal underpinnings, but we don't really know. But it's worth the writing. So that's all we have time for. Have a fantastic, warm and sunny weekend in Brussels or wherever you are, except apparently in some place in Belgium where it was 0 degrees yesterday in a specific local place. There was like a micro cold thing. Very, very weird. Google it. It's very strange. But anyway, yeah, it's like it's a thing. But anyway,
believe us. Like there's power of moments. I'm all confused now. That's not my whole feeling about the show is not confusion.
Anyway, enjoy the weekend. Have a lovely sunny weekend, and we'll see you online. Bye.
It's great to see you guys.
Thank you.